Okay, so so we left off last time with the thing of Klachriyad, So I looked over the Rashi. I think if you read the Rashi, it's clear what Rashi means. Like, you know what I mean? You can get sort of confused, like if you, try to read things in there. But if you just read Rashi, it's very clear. Because the Gemara says, like if you look at the Gemara says that it's on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, right? So the Gemara says that Hatzad that Hatovet Semer Shal Gavei Behema, right? That's Chayiv. If you spin the hair on the back of the Behema, you're going to be Chayiv, right? So the thing is, that's Rabbi Yochanan, right? Now Rav Kahana comes along and he says, no, Ein Derech Geziza Bekach. Ain't derech manafitz bekach, ain't derech tviya bekach. This is not the normal derech. This is klachiyad. Nobody spins hair on the back of an animal, right? You cut the hair off first, and then you do the malacha.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the Gemara says, one second. It says no. Rabbi Yochanan says not true, because look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, well, let's get the pasuk. It's shatav be'izim v'tavav be'izim, but the pasuk says. See, the pasuk calls it tviya. The pasuk says, "Kol hanashim asher nasa liban osana bechachma, whose heart lifts them up with chachma, tavu es ha'izim." Okay, they spun the goat. So the Gemara says, "What do you mean they spun the goat?" So it means they spun on the back of the goat. Okay, they created the wool. They spun the wool on the back of the goat while the hair was still attached. Right. So Rabbi Yochanan's argument is: how could you say that is not tviya? The Torah calls it tviya. The Torah calls it spinning the wool. So how could you say that's not the malacha if the Torah gives it that name? The malacha that those women did, it calls it tviya. You can't tell me then that's not a malach of tviya. The Torah wouldn't call it that term. Right? So that's his argument. Right? So you see, if I duplicate what they did, that should be tviya too. Okay? So what is the Gemara answer? The Gemara answer is no. Chachma Yisei Rashaini. Nah. That's Chachma Yisei. That takes special skill. Okay? That takes special skill. Right? Now take a look at Rashi.
What's the whole thing of saying it takes special skill?
What's the whole thing of saying it takes special skill? Why is that? Why does that knock off Rabbi Yochanan's proof? His proof
meaning that it's not lahariyad.
Special skill would mean. Let's see. Take a look at Rashi.
Okay.
Rashi says, "Chachma Yisair." It's like in the middle of the wide lines. Okay. Mm-hmm. Rashi says, "Kidichsiv v'chol isha chachmas leiv." The women that had this unbelievable skill, this unbelievable chachma, they were able to do that. That's why the Torah calls it tviya. Ava lehedyot, but for a regular person, ain't darka b'kach. That's not the way a regular person does it. V'have kalachiyad, and it's kalachiyad. Now, Rashi means for the regular person it's kalachiyad, because that's what he's saying. He's saying the Torah called it spinning for the women that knew how to do it, right? But we're talking about a regular person, right? Your halacha of Rabbi Yochanan, is your halacha for a special woman, or your halacha is for the head yot? So you're giving a halacha for not only for a skilled person, but for a head yot. And for a head yot, it's ein derech darka b'kach. For the head yot, it's kalacha yad. That's clearly what Rashi's saying. He's dividing the performers into two groups. So he says, but for the head yot, it's kalachiyad. But not for an isha chachma. It's not kalachiyad. For her, it is darko. And that's why the kasha is no kasha, because when the Torah calls it spinning, it's talking for that person. Yes, for that person it is spinning. If that person would do that malacha, that would be spinning. But not for the head yot. So it depends, Rabbi Yochanan. If you're talking about that person, fine. That's what Rashi's saying, clearly. Now Rashi, if Rashi meant, but it's for everybody, it's kalachiyad. I mean, I think he would have to tell you. I mean, this is not a guessing game. I mean, Tosos clearly said it's bottled, it's for everybody's kalach yad. If Rashi would mean havi kalach yad now even for the isha, mm-hmm. he'd have to say the havi kalach yad l'kuli alma. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, otherwise you put anything you want into Rashi.
Right, because especially with it going with the Gemara, Rashi's just saying that's part of the argument, meaning that yes, it's true that the women do it this way, and that's the normal way to do it, but that's just for them.
That's just for them.
And, right, that makes
that's
sense.
Clearly what Rashi's saying. But for the head yot,
right.
Not true.
Right. Right, I see.
So then it depends who the performer is, according to Rashi.
Right.
It's a subjective thing. If you're a head, you have to ask one question before you decide: are you a head yod or not? Right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's Rashi. So Rashi's telling you an unbelievable thing: that kalach yod is subjective. It depends. If you know how to do this unbelievable action, then yes, you're chayev. If you're not so proficient, and for you, it's kalach yod. Right, so it would come out. In other words, things that we do, let's say kalach yad. Let's say you want to open a grape juice bottle, right? And you're going to have to break the seal, right? So we do a kalach yad, right? So if a guy would do it often enough, that he becomes very proficient in. I don't know how we do it. Let's say, instead of like this, one guy holds it, or you know, you could do it like backhanded, sort of, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say you become so proficient that, yeah, with your or your teeth. I mean, a guy is,
yeah, there's a lot of ways.
Depends, you know, your age. When I was 30 years ago, yeah, I could use my teeth. Now already, not so easy. But yeah, if that's the way a guy gets used to it and he's unbelievably proficient, he's better at that than doing the normal way, so it's not kalach yad anymore.
Beer bottle.
That's it. Right? I used to have very strong teeth. Doing it. My parents used to look at me, what are you doing? You're going to break your teeth. Break your teeth. Who breaks the teeth? I never heard of breaking your teeth. Now my teeth are all broken. I mean, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. The head yod is kalach yod. But not for an isha chacham. Right? So Tosas. But Tosfos says, one second. He says, "Batla daitan etzo kol adam." That's what the Gemara meant. The Gemara meant that since Rov HaOlam doesn't know how to do it that way, this is not subjective. It has to be one objective way to do the malacha. Is this objectively the way people do the malacha? No. So you're picking one isolated group. You can't determine malacha that way. It has to be objective. Right? So who is right? Who's right? Rashi's saying it's subjective. Tosa's saying it's objective. Right? Tosa has a very good proof. Right? Tosa bring a proof from the Gemara. That the Gemara says the Anshei Hutzal, I think we did the Gemara, right?
Yeah.
Anshei Hutzal used to carry the things, carry baskets on their head. And they didn't have to use their hands. They just walk around with baskets with things on their head. And they were very proficient at it. Right? It was a very efficient way for them to do the malacha, right? So the Gemara says, could you say that's not Hotzah? Right? They were very proficient at it. What's the Gemara's answer? No. They were very proficient, but malacha has to have one tzura. You can't have eight different ways to do the malacha. For Rov HaOlam, it's an inefficient way. So therefore, since that's kalach yad, it's inefficient for most people, then that's it. Even if Anshei Hutzal would do it. It has to be objectively, that is not the derech of caring. And therefore, it doesn't matter who does it, you're not chayef. Right? So if that's the case, that would seem to prove conclusively that malacha has to be objective. So the question is, I mean, Rashi knew that Gemara tell? Right? How did Rashi possibly say over here it's subjective? That's the question.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's a good proof.
That's what?
That's a good proof.
That's a pretty good proof.
I didn't catch it.
In other words, right? With the proof from Anshei Hutzal?
Yeah, that.
Because the Gemara says by Hutzal, that what would be considered kalach yad when it comes to hotzah? What would you consider kalach yad? So the Gemara says, kalach yad would be if I carry something on my head. If I walk outside, carry from a rishus yachid to a rishus rab, and I carry something not on my hand, but on my head.
Oh, but then...
Gemara says, that's kalach yad.
But then the anshei hotzah were experts at...
Oh, but the Gemara says, what do you mean? What do you mean that's kalach yad? I could show you anshei hotzah, that's how they carry. So for them, that's not kalach yad. So the Gemara says, no, but you can't isolate one group. But their way of doing it may be good for them. But Rov Ha'olam doesn't carry that way. And we have to determine the normal derech based on what everybody does, not one group. So therefore the Gemara concludes that no matter who's doing the carrying, even in Hutzah, if they carry on their head, they're Pater. Why? It's efficient for them. It doesn't go by your private case. If it's kalach yad for most people, that's kalach yad. Mm-hmm. Right? So Tosa says, so you see that we determine the derech of how to do something objectively, not by you as a yachid. So therefore Tosa says that that's why if you want to spin wool on the back of an animal, even if you're very proficient, doesn't matter. That's kalach yad. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore he has a proof that kalach yad is objective. So our question is, how could Rashi say that in the case of spinning wool, it's subjective? Because Rashi says that it's only kalach yad for a head yet. But if a expert would spin wool on the back of the goats, bichayef. So the question is, what's the difference between kalach yad when it comes to spinning wool, where we say according to Rashi that it's subjective, each person determines their own way of doing it, whereas by hotzah, there the Gemara says you can't determine your own way, hotzah goes by how everybody does it. What's the difference? So how can Rashi argue with Tosfos over here? Because Tosfos seems to prove it conclusively there's only one objective way to do malacha. And yet Rashi seems to say that when it comes to spinning wool, everybody could have their own way.
What's the problem there, though?
What's that?
What would be the
spinning the wool?
Yeah.
Well, let's say, for instance, a person who's a very...
Like, how does what Tosfos is saying, contradict what Rashi's saying?
Because Rashi says that it's only kalacha yad for a head yet.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But if an Isha Chachama, if an expert spins wool on the back of an animal, Rashi says that's considered normal derech. For that person, it's the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if for that person it's the norm, so what should Rashi say with regard to carrying on your head? Let's say you have a person that's very proficient in carrying on the head. So shouldn't Rashi say in that case also that would be the norm?
No, carrying on your head is kalach yad for everybody except for anshei hutzal.
Right.
Like anshei hutzal are like the women.
They're the exception. Yeah. Right. So therefore, could anshei hutzal, according to Rashi, could anshei hutzal carry on their head? Would that be a malacha for them?
Yeah, it would be a malacha.
No, see that?
No.
The Gemara says conclusively. The Gemara says, what about anshei hutzal? The Gemara says, no, we can't. For anshei hutzal, they have to go by everybody. Now, Zedek Gemara says, "Batla daitan eitzel kol adam." We don't. Anshei Hutzal can't make their own malachas. So the fact that they can carry on their head, it doesn't matter. It's still kalach yad, even for them. They can't make their own kalach yad. It has to be one kalach yad for everybody. So that the Gemara clearly says over there. But now Rashi is saying here, everybody has their own kalach yad. Which one is it?
Yeah. Okay, now I see the problem.
Okay.
I'm fully caught up.
Caught up.
This is hard. Sounds like a knockout.
It sounds like a knockout.
Kind of not sure even how to approach it, but I'm thinking that at least just as a direction, as a start, just to say that Rashi can't disagree that there's such thing as batel daita itzah kol adam, right? So that he's got to agree with. So the only thing is, it's I think we'd have to say that this is a special case. This spinning wool is different somehow.
Okay, good.
So maybe it's different in that. Well, that's really fully worked out, but maybe it's different in that with carrying, you're doing like a different kind of carrying. It's carrying in hands, it's carrying on your head. So that has to do with changing the type of carrying you're doing. So that would be a type of skill. Whereas opposed to spinning wool.
Right, I was trying to think of something.
You're not changing the spinning of the wool, you're just changing where you're spinning
right,
the wool.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. Now, spinning the wool, it's the same exact action. It's just where the wool is located. It's the conditions that make it difficult. Right? In other words, if I would spin wool, let's say, with my feet, you see, or my elbows, I wouldn't use my hands, so then you'd say that's a different action. You see, I changed the way I'm doing it, the action itself. But if it's just where the wool is located, instead of being on a spool, it's on the back of the animal. So the action I'm doing is the exact same action. What makes it inefficient is the situation, the conditions under which I'm working, because I have an animal that's not stationary, that could be moving around, and that the wool is situated inconveniently. But the spinning, I'm doing the exact same spinning. You see? So that's what Rashi's saying. Rashi's saying, really, there's two parts to the malacha. There's the action, and then there's the conditions under which I'm acting. So Rashi says that if I would change the action, then you'd be right. If the action that I do is inefficient, then he agrees. That's objective. So Anshei Hutzal, they're doing a different action. Nobody carries with their head. That's like spinning wool with my toes. It's a totally different activity. You see? So Rashi agrees when the action has to be, there has to be one objective way to do the action. That's objective. You see, that you can't have your own way to do the actual mice of spinning. But Rashi says, with regard to the conditions, if I say I could do the activity under these conditions, that's okay. You see, that could be subjective. Now, if you can't do it under those conditions, for you it makes it inefficient, and for you it's kolachayad. You see, so that's how he differentiates. He says, when it comes to the conditions, that's subjective. But the mice itself, the tzura of the mice itself, that's objective. You see, and what does Tosus hold?
He just holds that it's
whatever you're used to. Like, I don't know, he has like a much of a broader,
he doesn't differentiate between the action and the condition. Conditions of the action.
That's right.
So whatever is the normal way to do it, that's it. Forget about conditions.
That's right.
He doesn't differentiate. He says the conditions must be objective and the action. So therefore, both of them must be objective. Well, the only thing is with Rashi, this is kind of what I was having a problem with when I was saying it, that that if he's going to say that for it being, if you're going to go by the, let's say you say the action is the same, it's the same action, right? It's the same action, but it's different conditions. So, how could you ever have a case of how does that make sense that that's kalahariyat? Meaning that, like, if I was trying to open a grape juice bottle,
right,
and I was on a boat,
right,
the boat's just rocking back and forth, I would say, big deal, you're on a boat. So you're still opening a grape juice bottle. Who cares where you are? Your action is possible.
But I see what you're saying, right?
That doesn't make your action kalach or yad. how does that change your action to Kalach HaYar just because the conditions are different? You're still doing the same action.
Well, I would say like this. In other words, see over there, because you're saying,
and I guess the problem wouldn't be there for Tosos because he doesn't differentiate between actions and conditions. It's the same thing. Whatever way you're going to change it, whether or not it's your action or the condition.
That would be Kalach HaYar. In other words, according to Rashi, if I open a thing, let's say, while that thing is moving, that would be Kalach HaYar. Because nobody can do that, because that's an inefficient way. The guy has to take it, and let's say put it on. Let's say the normal way is to put something on a table, and then open it. Well, let's say a can opener, something like that, right? Put it on the table, and then you have a thing that you pierce a spout into it, right? Okay. Now, let's say for instance, I'm able to do that in midair without really putting it in the table. I'm able to do it while the thing is suspended. I'm able to open it with the can opener. That would be Kalach HaYar. It's the same exact maisa, but the object that I'm doing with, most people have to have it in a stationary spot where it's supported. And I could do it in an unsupported way. Now, let's say I'm on a boat where the thing is rocking like crazy. Nobody can open a... Can do it in this way. You see? And I'm able to do it. I mean, I would say that would be a comparable thing. Where as long as... It's part of the situation. I mean, it has to be a part of the situation. In other words, it can't be, you know what I mean? If I'm spinning on the back of an animal, where the wool is part of the conditions that allow me to do the spinning. You know what I mean? So if maybe you're trying to construct a case where it's not really one of the conditions of the malacha, it's an extraneous thing. Like, you know, I can imagine that, let's say there's a case where there's something extraneous. Like, let's say a guy wants to do a malacha, and there's a lot of noise in the room.
Right.
So it's hard to concentrate. You see, you may say that's not really a condition of the malacha, because that's a totally extraneous thing.
Right. Yeah.
But it would have to be something that it's a necessary condition. This is the way you... It's a certain setup, like I mentioned, like you put a can on a table, and that stabilizes it so that you can do the action.
That's part of the activity.
That's really part of the conditions necessary. Now, noise, you know what I mean? I mean, there are certain things that you might say is not part of the conditions, but would prevent you. Like if a man is, shooting a bow and arrow at you, and you're trying to do malacha, I don't know if that would make a kalach HaYar, because that's really a totally extraneous thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So... Right? It's not necessarily anything that would interfere with your action. It has to be something that's really a condition of how one of the conditions of the malach. Mm-hmm.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
All right?
Okay.
So I guess the question would be, like, if you were on a boat, and part of the conditions of the malach is they have some kind of stationary surface, and it removes that from occurring, so then that would be kalach HaYar. Okay, but that's right. So that's a clear chiluk. I mean, that's how they have to differentiate. Okay. Okay. So that's that. Right. Right. So that would be. I mean, practically, that would be the difference between Rashi and Tosos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Whether a condition would make something subjective. Okay. Alrighty. So let's see. Okay. That basically is the end of that. Okay, now you have the next thing. We're going to the next thing. This is an interesting thing. If you go down to the two dots, HaKosher v'HaMatir. Okay? So kosher is tying a knot. Okay? So the Gemara says, K'shir b'mishkan hechi havi. Where do you find tying a knot in the Mishkan? Okay? So the Gemara says, Ama Rabba, Shekain Kosherin b'yistos olam. Okay, so they used to tie the
stakes.
Yeah, the stakes. That's the word I was looking for. I couldn't think of that word. I kept thinking pegs, you know, like the pegs of a tent, but it's stakes. That's right. They put the, for the Mishkan, so they put the stakes down, right? And then they would have the cords to tie the curtains onto the to tie the covers onto those stakes. Mm-hmm. Okay, to hold it in place. Okay, so okay, so Rabbah says that's where you find kshira, mm-hmm. tie a knot. Okay, so the Gemara says, so Abaye, Amalei Abaye, Hahu kosher amanas lahater. So Abaye says, what do you mean? That's kosher amanas lahater. Why? Because the Mishkan was not stationary. The Mishkan they camped for a little while and then they moved on. So the purpose of the knot really was just to function as a temporary knot. Okay, and Rashi says that it says later on in the Gemara that any kesher she'ina shel kayama you're not chayav for. So how could you possibly say that if I knot the mishkan onto a stake that will be considered kesher shel kayama? You can't be chayav for that. Okay, so Abaye gives a different answer. Okay, Abaye says shekain arge yirios shenifsku lahen nima kosher also. Okay, so Abaye says that the ones that wove the curtains, okay, the yirios. So if one of the cords would rip, so they'd have to knot it to repair the curtain. Okay, okay. But the only question is then, how did Rabbah? What was Rabbah's idea? And I don't think Rabbah really retracted necessarily, because Abaye asked the question, but Rabbah, that was his position. Okay, so the question is, didn't Rabbah know that they're taking the tent down in 2 days, the Mishkan, you're going to untie the knot? So how do you possibly maintain that's a kesher shel kayama? That's what I'd like to know.
And what does the Abaye say again? The real case is that his case is that they would fix. Like,
yeah, when they would. Well, he goes through a few things actually, because the Gemara says then, but that's not really the normal. That's not kabbal to do it that way. So he ends up with his final thing is different. But okay. his basic idea is that it has to be that if the cord would rip, if one of the strings would rip on the urea, so they would knot it and make a permanent knot. And that's a knot that you're not taking out. Okay, but the knots for the Mishkan, you tie the Mishkan to the stake, that clearly you're going to take out. So how could you construe that as a kesher shel kayama?
Well, because practically they were just moving all the time.
They didn't know what, you know, it had to do with the Anan. And when you know the Hashkacha will tell them to move, but it could be a day, it could be a month. I mean, they didn't know.
That's definitely not permanent. I mean, like they're tying it, knowing that we might move sometime.
Eventually, I mean, they're on the way to Eretz Yisrael, yeah. And maybe they may be staying very long, but they know that it's a temporary situation. They're not remaining here permanently. This is not the final destination. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the first question.
I mean, we're assuming that who is it, Rabbah?
Yeah.
Rabbah, that he was like aware of the halacha, right? Saying, we're assuming he's not going against the halacha.
Right, he's not going against the halacha, right.
That's
right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Right, we're assuming he's not going against that, because that's the Gemara later on. It seems that everybody agrees with kesher shel kayama is a chayev, and because if you we'll do later on in the Gemara it gives cases where you're not chayev, where it's mutter, and that is any knot that you know you're going to take out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right, like an everyday knot, a guy ties his shoe and he knows he's untying it at the end of the day, so that's mutter. Okay. See that Rashi says kosher amanas lahater who v'chi haygavna patrina leila come on did not call kesher she'eino shel kayama ein chayav in the love. Okay. That's the question. How do you construe that as a kesha shakayama?
Even though it's meant to be untied later?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Even though it's meant to be untied later.
How do we say it's a permanent knot? Right?
That's right.
Maybe just intention isn't enough.
Okay. Intention is not enough, okay.
Your intention isn't enough of a thing to say, oh, it's a temporary knot.
Good.
Because maybe it's more of like the normal way of this knot is in a permanent fashion.
Okay.
Okay, good. You just happen to be untying it prematurely, but it's...
Okay, good, good. So in other words, he maintains that it is not determined by your intent. You are tying a very strong knot. It's going to hold the Mishkan. It has to be a secure knot. Now, you intend, yes, that you only need this for one day, or 2 days, or 10 minutes. Fine. But your intent doesn't determine it. We look at the knot. Is this a knot that if you would not untie, would this not come out? Would this knot slowly loosen up and come out in 2 days? No. This knot would last... Would be Mekayim. This knot would last Lolam. The only thing is, you're going to undo it. Fine. But we don't go by your intent. We go by the knot itself. And since the knot itself is that type of knot, it's a secure knot that if you don't undo it, it will stay. That's Kesha Shakayama. Okay? Very good idea. I mean, makes a lot of sense. Why should I determine Kesha Shakayama? Well, you're going to do it. Look at the knot. This is a perfect knot. It's a square knot. This thing is going to last forever. You tell me that's not a kesher shakayama?
I was thinking, like, on Shabbos, like, you can't double knot your shoes. Even
that's
though
right.
You could say, oh, I have intention to undo it later.
Exactly.
You know, but, like, if you just leave it, like, I've had double knotted shoes that have stayed tied for, like, years. You know?
That's right.
Like,
you know? You come back a few years later, the knot is still there. It's not coming out. Right, exactly. So you see, on Shabbos, even if you intend that you're going to take it out at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what your intent is, the knot itself is a permanent knot. So that was Rabba's position. Rabba's position is, it goes by the knot. Okay? And we don't care about you're going to take it out prematurely or you intend it for a limited amount of time. It doesn't matter. Okay? But Abaye maintained, no. Abaye maintained that it is true you need a knot that's a secure knot to be Kesha Shakayama, but you need something else. You need the Kavanas Adam. His intent has to be for permanent. If his intent is that this knot should just, I only need it for a day, and at the end of the day I'm taking it out, that's not Shakayama. Okay? Mm-hmm. So therefore he maintained that would not be Shakayama. Okay? Alrighty. So what did Abaye say? So Abaye said that the Arge Yerias Shenifsku Lahanima Koshinosa. So he maintained now that where do you see in the Mishkan when they repaired the curtain, they used to have to tie the thread with a knot, and that knot nobody's taking out. That will remain there. That's part of the permanent structure of the curtain. Okay. So he says like this, Omele Rava. Now the first Rava they changed to Rava, so I'm not sure about that. But this may be a new Rava. Omele Rava Taratzta Kosher Matir Mayikalamemar. Okay? So Rava says, okay, fine, so you've explained kosher. What about Matir? Right? Because the Mishnah says if I take out a Kesher Shokayama, I'm also chayev. So where do you find Matir in the Mishkan? So Gemara says, "V'chi tema di misrami le trechuti." What's this game on? Di misrami le tre kitri. Okay, that if it turns out that there are two knots bahadi hadadi together, shari chad v'kater chad. And as he's saying, that sometimes when you're making the curtain, so then you thread rips, you make a knot. Then you go into the next row, and it turns out a thread ripped right under the first knot, so you're going to make another knot to to join those two threads. But then it's going to come out, you're going to have two knots next to each other, and it's going to look unsightly, because you'll notice it. Right? So therefore, he says, that's where you have matir, that they would untie one of those knots, and leave that thread there, just leave it unknotted. You know what I mean? In this way, there'd only be one knot, it wouldn't be so noticeable. Okay? So the Gemara says, if that's the case, you wouldn't do something like this. May construct a curtain in this way for a person. So he's saying that that's not the way you can't make. You can't repair the curtain in that fashion because it's going to look unsightly. So that he maintains they certainly didn't do. All right. So the Gemara says, so where do you find the malacha? The Gemara says, no. El Amar Rava. Rava rejects Abaye. He says like this, Shekein Sadei Chilazon Kosher Numatir. He says, no. Where do you find that knotting and unknotting in the Mishkan? He says, you find it by the nets. When they would make the nets to catch the chilazon, yes, for the dye. So how do you make the nets? They have rope, and they tie the rope across, going this way and that way, and they would knot it to make the, like these fishermen ropes, mm-hmm. right? When you throw that, when you see them thrown in the water, so there's these knots all over the place. This is how they make the ropes. This is how they make the nets out of rope. Okay? So therefore, they would knot it to produce the net, and that's where you find knotting in the Mishkan. And where do you find unknotting? So take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says like this. He says, Koshrinu Matirin. Rashi says, it's two lines from the bottom. Shekol Rishtos Asuyim Ksharm Ksharm. That's how you make nets with knots. Vehein Kishre Kayama. These are permanent, right? Because the net, you're making a net. You want the net. You're not going to undo these knots. You're not going to make a net. It takes you 10 hours to make a net, and you're going to undo the net. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, right? So this is a net you're going to use permanently. So these knots stay there. But then he said like this, Upamim shetzarich litol chutin meresh hazeh ulehosif alzeh. But sometimes, let's say you have two nets, right? And now one of the nets you want to use in a place where you need it a little bigger. So he says what you'll do is sometimes you'll untie one section of net from the other and join it with the other net that you need to have a much larger net. Okay? So then you'll have to untie some of the netting from this net over here. In this place you need a smaller net, so you untie some of the netting. Okay? And then you join it with this one. So that's where you find, when they want to interchange nets, you find that they'll unknot some of the net. Okay? So he says, okay? So that's what he says. So that's where you find untying in the Mishkan. Okay? I mean, the only problem is one slight difficulty. I mean, why is that Shokayama? In other words, isn't that really undoing what Rashi just said? I mean, Rava's whole thing and Abai's whole thing was, no, it goes by your kavana. You want this permanently. And Rashi says, this is a permanent knot. Except sometimes you have to untie them to join them with another net. Well, I mean, isn't that except like sort of an exception? I mean, doesn't that sort of like get in the way of the sentence, the word you just said right before? It's permanent? I mean, so it's not permanent. It means that part of the use, sometimes you have to untie it. So what's the difference between that and the Mishkan where we said that since you know that you're going to have to untie it, that even though the knot is very strong, but it comes out, you have to take it out. So here too. I mean, you tell me, Pamim sometimes? Okay. So you don't always take it out. Fine. It may last pretty long, but you know that in the use of the thing, sometimes you're untying them. So, why should that be kayama?
This is a bayashita.
What's that?
This is a bayashita.
It's by.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds like, like those tables that you can shift out and then make a bigger table.
Right.
Yeah.
Bring down. Right.
Yeah, I never use a bigger table. Some Pesach.
Right, exactly. Except Pesach. And I mean, of course. And you're right. I guess pretty often.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it seems that it's Rava is really. In other words, Rav is not arguing with Abaye. He's going along the same basic position of Abaye. He's just, but he's not accepting Rav. You know, is he, right? He's looking for a case of Kesher Shakayama that is permanent, and that's why Rashi says this is Shakayama. So I just like to understand why, if I sometimes take it out, that could still be Kayama. What is the difference in that, and where I take out the knots for the Mishkan?
Well, why can't we just use the same argument and say that like your intention isn't what dictates its, you know, lifespan or whatever,
right.
whether or not you get permanent or not. It's whether or not the nature of it
is to last, right?
Right.
So then, why did Rava have to give a new example? Why wouldn't he just accept Rava's case was a perfect case? The knots that you make for the stakes for the curtains.
Oh, fine.
But he wasn't happy with that. He said, "No, that's not kind. That's not permanent. I'll show you permanent. Permanence with the nets. But the net is the same thing. You have to take it out to enlarge other nets."
Uh huh. Maybe. I don't know if I'm getting too specific here, but maybe with the... I don't know where I'm going.
We assume that if you untie the net to tie it to another net on Shabbos, that would be matir and like whatever it's called. Like, what's it called? Matir, like tie?
Matir is untie.
Yeah, it would actually be matir, right? It's not like... And tying it back would be tying the kosher.
That's right.
But when you're okay here, maybe it's when you tie the stake, you know you're untying that stake, like, you know, without a doubt.
Okay.
But whereas with this net case, you don't necessarily know that you're going to untie it later.
Okay.
So, like, it almost has like a more permanent, intention behind it, whatever it is, a more permanent lifespan, I guess. Like, it's...
So the problem that I understand what you're saying, right.
Because you're only going to make it bigger, untie it and make it bigger for like an exceptionally large kilozone pile or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
So the only problem I have with that is that then it seems that what makes it permanent is your...
Intention, right?
Is your intention, but the reason why it's still permanent, even though you might take it out, is because you sort of... unsure. It's. In other words, right? If I'm sure I'm taking it out, then that's temporary. But if I might be taking it out, might not be, I'm not sure that I'm taking it out, like with the nets, that's permanent. So then it seems that permanent, if you tell me permanent is, I intend it permanently. That I understand. But if you tell me it's permanent because I'm not sure. I might want it permanently.
Yeah,
I mean,
busy.
Sounds a little bit wishy-washy. I mean,
yeah.
What's your intent?
Yeah.
You don't know? So then we should say, we don't know if it's a permanent knot. It might be a permanent knot, but we're not sure.
Uh-huh. Okay, fine. Back to the workshop.
You get it.
That by the Mikdash, by the Mishkan, you have Kavana to you plan on untying it later and just taking the whole thing down. And that's it. Like, it just, so your Kavana is to just totally remove the knot and remove what the structure that you made. Right, the knot held the structure together. You wanted just moving knots and remove the structure, but by the net, you don't want to. Your kavana, it's true. Your kavana is to later untie it at a certain point. You don't know when. You might, whatever it is, but even so, your intention to untie it at a later point in time is not to untie it to take it apart, but it's to make a bigger net.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily like leaving the parsha of what the net was for. It's not like I'm untying it to just destroy this net.
Right.
But I'm untying it to. It would be like if I would say, it would be to untie it to make the net better.
Right.
But not necessarily. It's the untying it is serving the purpose of having a better net, as opposed to by the Mishkan, it's untying it to destroy it. You want to take it down.
Right. Okay. And, good.
I'm not really sure if I can pinpoint exactly why that's.
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, what you're saying is, with the reason why the Mishkan is temporary is because the intrinsic, the usefulness of the Mishkan is over. Right? It's the use I have for this knot is for 2 days, let's say. Its use has expired after that time period. By the net, it's not that the usefulness of the net has expired, it's that there is another need that overrides this net. In other words, if I didn't need the bigger net there, let's say I had the net was big enough over there, there's a competing need. You see, it's not that I want this net, that's it. I have no more use for the net. I have use for the net. It serves a function. The only thing is, there is a competing need that I could better use. This net could serve a better purpose. You see? So therefore, since I have another competing need, which this net, if I untie, will serve that purpose better, so now I untie it. You see? But not because the usefulness of the net has expired. There's a competing use. You see? That this net can serve a greater purpose. But by the Mishkan, it's not I'm taking it out because now the Mishkan, I need the Mishkan. The only thing is, there's a competing need. No! I'm taking it down because I don't need the Mishkan anymore. That's it. The use in this position has gone, has ended. The use of this object at this time for this purpose is over. You know what I mean? So that's the difference. So what he says, the kavana has to be permanent, it means inherently it must be permanent. My kavana for this net inherently is permanent. And the thing is, I understand that if there be something extra, a competing need, yeah, I may have to take it out. But not because I didn't want this permanently. I wanted this permanently. And if I had enough net where I didn't have to take and borrow from one net, I'd never take this out. I put these knots in here. Do you think I want to undo them? I'm undoing them because I have a limited supply of nets, and I have to use this somewhere else. But if I had an unlimited supply, if I had other nets over there, I'd never take this knot out. See, that's the difference. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the fact that I know I may have to take it out, that doesn't mean inherently my...
It's a temporary thing.
Inherently, it's a temporary purpose. No, inherently, it's a permanent purpose.
So inherently, it's only a temporary thing if you know you're going to take it out for not needing it anymore.
That's right. If by its nature I know inherently I only want this for 3 days, not because there's going to be something else that might be more important, but inherently I'm pitching a tent. Do I intend that this tent serve a permanent purpose? No. If I wanted a permanent, I'd build it with bricks. I wouldn't put up a tent. You know what I mean? But a net, what are you going to say? If I wanted it permanently, what? That's what you would do. You would build this net. You see? So that's the thing. Inherently, the net really is permanent. And the thing is, since I don't have enough nets, I may have to sometimes take this out because of an extraneous factor is forcing me to undo the net. You see? But by the Mishkan, it's not an extraneous factor. That's mitrilaso. I only want this for a week. It's not an extraneous thing. If I put up a tent and now I take the tent down because now I'm finished camping, you say, oh, it's an extraneous thing? No, inherently, camping is a temporary activity. All right?
Awesome.
That's the difference, yeah.
That's very nice.
Tricky, tricky. Yeah,
okay.
That's a tricky one, yeah.
It seems like exactly.
A bit, thing. Right? But I think you're on the track. Yeah. But that's what you're saying. I mean, that's the approach.
I couldn't pinpoint
that was the approach.
Today, but I definitely see it right now.
All right.
That's good.
Okay, good.
Excellent.
All right. Stop here. Okay. Hit the same button again, the center button.
Stop.